Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Drs. Foss and Chagpar welcome Dr. Sarah Goldberg for a conversation about clinical research for lung cancer. Dr. Goldberg is assistant professor of medicine in medical oncology at the Yale School of Medicine. Here's Francine Foss.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about how long you've been at the Yale Cancer Center and a little bit about yourself and your history and interest in lung cancer?
Sure. I've been at the Yale Cancer Center for just about 6 months now. I'm originally from New York, but I've been taking care of patients with lung cancer over the past few years in Boston at the Mass General Hospital and at Dana-Farber. And I came to Yale, again, just about 6 months ago. And since I've been here, I've been treating patients with all sorts of different thoracic malignancies with a focus on lung cancer and clinical trials.
So, Sarah, tell us a little bit more about clinical trials and clinical research. It seems to be something that, you know, everybody's talking about, but I think that people still might have questions about what exactly is a clinical trial, why should I get involved, how do I get involved? So tell us a little bit about all of that.
Sure. I think you're right. We talk a lot about clinical trials in medicine and specifically in oncology and cancer medicine, but a lot of patients have many questions about what a clinical trial even is or if it's something they should consider. So a clinical trial is any sort of study where we are looking at how patients do with a certain treatment in broad strokes. So specifically for oncology and in lung cancer, we're always looking to find better treatments and better ways of taking care of our patients. And clinical trials are a way to do that. So basically when a patient is in treatment for lung cancer and we're looking for better ways of treating that patient, we may consider a clinical trial and ask them if that's something they would want to be involved in.
Some people equate a clinical trial with an investigational drug mm-hmm. or something that's experimental. Can you kind of define those terms so that patients can understand the difference between an investigational drug and a trial that just involves, you know, other drugs?
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's a very good point. So all clinical trials are asking a question about, in this case, oncology, and in my case, usually lung cancer. But it doesn't always mean that a trial involves an experimental medication or treatment. Sometimes it's two treatments that are standard, but we're trying to distinguish one from the other, such as a specific patient or type of disease where one treatment is better than the other. So it doesn't always involve an experimental medication or treatment, but often it actually does. Many times we have trials available at Yale and other places where we are looking at medications that are not approved by the FDA and are not standard treatments, but we have reason to think they might be as good or even better than our standard treatment. So we're looking to see if that's the case by trying them in the clinic.
So for a lot of patients, I think clinical trials are a little bit scary mm-hmm. because here you are, you've just been diagnosed with cancer, and your doctor starts talking to you about answering research questions and something that might be, you know, experimental or investigational. Why should patients consider clinical trials? I mean, why not just do standard of care?
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. So it's something that's a very personal decision if it's something you may even want to be a part of. It's also something to talk to your doctor about, maybe a doctor that you've known for a long time, or maybe the doctor that's been taking care of your cancer or you're just meeting to take care of a new cancer diagnosis. It's something where if a standard treatment is known to be a very good treatment and has very good success rate, that may be something you want to pursue and a doctor may suggest that, or it may be something where the standard treatment isn't quite as good as we would like it to be, or we think an experimental treatment could possibly be better. And that's a time when a clinical trial makes a lot of sense, and it's a great thing to really have an in-depth discussion with your doctor about. There's also a whole research team that can be really helpful in discussing that, research nurses and other people who are very involved in clinical trials.
So could you talk a little bit about access to clinical trials? We are told, I think, by the National Cancer Institute that only a small percentage of patients with cancer actually enter clinical trials. What is the issue with respect to access to clinical trials, and why is it that more patients aren't going into these trials?
At larger academic centers such as Yale and many others around the country and the world, there are many clinical trials available for patients. So at smaller centers and in private practice offices, it's less likely to have such numbers of clinical trials. So part of the issue may just be patients aren't coming to the academic centers where the clinical trials tend to be happening. But even at larger centers where there are clinical trials, many patients are hesitant to participate. They just as you brought up earlier, they're hesitant because they don't understand what it means to be part of a trial, or they're worried that the treatment may not be as good as standard treatment. But again, I really would encourage anyone to talk to their doctors or their nurse or people that have been involved in trials to think about whether it makes sense for them. Because again, sometimes you can have trials where the treatment could be better than what we have now, and it's really something that I think all patients should at least consider and discuss.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that we often say to patients is that patients who participate in clinical trials, they tend to do better than patients who don't. In part because, as you say, oftentimes we're comparing what is standard to what we think is better. We never compare what is standard to what we think might be inferior, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So can you talk a little bit about that concept? Because I don't think that that's something that a lot of patients understand. And maybe talk a little bit about all of the regulatory framework that houses clinical trials that might make it a little bit less scary mm-hmm. for patients who are thinking about whether or not they want to participate mm-hmm. in a clinical trial.
So there's a lot of regulation that goes on behind clinical trials. And so every trial that is in any center where you may be going to see a physician or a team there has been reviewed very carefully by a panel of people who are experts in trials and research to make sure that it is something that is likely to be safe and for patients, and something that is not likely to be worse than our standard treatments. So just as you're saying, either something we think may be better or something we think may be the same but maybe with less side effects. So it's been, all of this has been very well discussed and studied to really try to make sure it's something safe and at least more effective for our patients, if not the same. And so I think a big misperception about trials is that you might be in the group that gets a placebo, or what people call a sugar pill, that you might be getting nothing. And that's really very uncommon in oncology trials specifically, but many other trials too. Very often we're comparing a newer treatment with an existing treatment. It's very rare to get nothing on a clinical trial, to get no treatment or no active treatment. So I think that's something that is not likely to happen in cancer clinical trials. It's really a treatment that is standard, usually compared to a treatment that may be better, or even many trials are just all patients get just one treatment.
And if you ever were on a placebo-controlled trial mm-hmm. or a trial in which the comparator was a sugar pill, mm-hmm. you'd be informed of what the two arms were, right? So you'd always know what was on the trial. A lot of people have this perception that they don't know what the two arms mm-hmm. are, or that there's some sort of secrecy behind mm-hmm. it.
That's right. And every trial that anyone would go on, you would have a large packet of information that would give you every detail you would need to know about the trial. You would know all possible side effects. You would know the possible groups you may be in, whether everyone gets the same treatment or some people get different treatments, but it would all be there in print that you can take home and really look over carefully. So you're very well informed before you would ever decide to participate.
And Sarah, one of the things that many cancer centers are doing and the NCI is doing is trying to get these trials, you know, out of the big academic centers and into the community mm-hmm. setting. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that? And I'm sure for lung cancer, which is a common cancer, that that's going to be critical to make these trials accessible to patients.
Right. I think that's right, especially in lung cancer, where it's such a common disease and patients don't always want to travel into cities to come to the bigger academic centers, and they want to stay with their physicians that may have been treating them for years. And especially when now we have so many clinical trials with really, really exciting medications or treatments where we have more potential than we've ever had before in lung cancer and in other diseases too, it's so important to get these trials into other centers and other sites, into the community, into physicians' offices. And we are actively trying to do that now in thoracic oncology, in lung cancer, and in other cancers. I know in Yale we have several sites in the community that we're associated with, and we are working to open trials there. So it may not just be that you need to come into one of the bigger hospitals to get onto one of these trials, that it may be available right in your own town. And I think that that's such a great resource for patients.
So one of the things that we talked about in terms of advantages of clinical trials is that you can potentially avail yourself of newer treatments, more effective treatments, treatments with less side effects. But the other advantage, I think, of participating in a clinical trial is really more of an altruistic one, in the sense that you are helping to move the frontier of cancer management forward and to help advance the field. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and whether you see that as a motivation for patients to participate in clinical trials, or whether you think that that's just not something that's really on their radar?
I hear patients tell me that all the time, that they want to participate because they have to deal with this disease and they have to undergo the treatment. And if there's anything that they can do to help others in the future, they want to do that. And so I see clinical trials as a way for patients to get treatments that may be better than what we have now. And I think that many patients see that too, but they also see it as a way of helping others, whereas, you know, they need to go through this and they have to be part of the trials, but maybe one day this will become the standard and it will be better than what we have now. So I completely agree. I think that many patients do this in an altruistic way, in that they want to help others who may be going through something similar.
One of the things that we're hearing a lot more about now is personalized medicine, kind of taking the tumor, looking at it, and deciding what treatment a patient should have. Can you talk about the interface between personalized medicine and clinical trials?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So personalized medicine is something that we are all very excited about in lung cancer, other cancers as well, but I think lung cancer has really been really made a lot of headway in that area. So personalized medicine, in general, means finding some characteristic about the cancer or the tumor, and matching a drug with it that is likely to work better because of that characteristic in the cancer. So personalizing the treatment to the disease itself, instead of treating all lung cancers the same, we try to match the disease with the treatment. And it's something that's really been developed over the last several years. Clinical trials now in lung cancer in particular are very much focused on personalized medicine, in that we don't necessarily want the types of treatments that have traditionally been in oncology, which are one size fits all. We really are looking for treatments where we think that one specific medication or treatment is the right one for that patient or that tumor. So that's the type of trials we are very focused on. It's not all of our trials, but many of them are personalized medicine trials. And what that means logistically for the treatment on the trial is that we would take a small piece of the tumor that's removed from the patient and study it to find out its characteristics, and then try to match those characteristics to a study treatment or treatment on a trial. And we hope that that would give the patient the best chance of doing very well with that.
Well, that's excellent. So we're going to take a short break for a medical minute, but please stay tuned to learn more information about clinical research opportunities and personalized medicine in lung cancer with Dr. Sarah Goldberg.
There are over 12 million cancer survivors in the United States right now, and the numbers keep growing. Completing treatment for cancer is a very exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. The return to normal activities and relationships may be difficult, and cancer survivors face other long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the one at Yale Cancer Center, to keep cancer survivors well and focused on healthy living. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anish Chagpar, and I am joined today by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss. Our guest today is Dr. Sarah Goldberg, and right before the break, we were talking a little bit about personalized medicine in lung cancer and clinical research. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit more about your specific research and the clinical trials that you're doing in personalized medicine. I hear that you're doing some outstanding work.
So some of the work that I'm doing at Yale involves just what we were talking about earlier, which is personalized medicine in cancer research. And specifically, that my area of interest and focus is in EGFR mutations in lung cancer. So we've been learning a lot about lung cancer over the last few years, and researchers have figured out that there's not just one type of lung cancer, there's actually many types that can be divided based on the specific mutation or alteration found in the cancer cells. And one of the more common ones is a mutation called EGFR. It's a mutation in the EGFR gene. And over the last several years, clinical trials have shown us that there are several medications that work very well for patients who have this specific change in the EGFR gene, the EGFR mutation in lung cancer. And so my research focuses on that and tries to make those treatments even more effective than they already are by combining different treatments and trying to use them earlier on in treatment instead of later on, and really trying to help patients live as well as they can for as long as possible.
Is this EGF receptor something that is tested routinely in lung cancer specimens? Would a patient, say, for instance, know whether their EGF receptor is mutated?
It's becoming more and more common that it's being tested in lung cancer. For most patients with advanced disease, we're testing it. There's several different types of lung cancer, and it's the non-small cell lung cancers where we're mostly testing for EGFR. And I think that because now we have such effective treatments for these patients who have EGFR mutations, it's very commonly tested. We don't always test it when patients have an earlier stage lung cancer that might be taken out by surgery, because it's not something where we use that information. Those patients undergo surgery, or some others may get radiation therapy, but they wouldn't necessarily get a medication that would be important to know their EGFR mutation status.
So you talk about this being a mutation in the EGFR gene. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times these days we talk about genes and gene mutations and genomics. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that. Is that what this is? And where do you see this field kind of going?
Mm-hmm. So EGFR is a gene that's in all of your cells. In cancer cells, in some lung cancer cells, that gene is altered, is changed, and it's what drives the cancer to grow. And the reason it's so important in research and in treatment is that we have a drug that inhibits that abnormality and can cause the cancer to stop growing. The field in general is looking for different alterations such as EGFR, because if we could find them in cancer cells and we can find a drug that matches that, then we can treat those patients much more effectively. And we've been very successful in some diseases. So in lung cancer, of course, there's EGFR, as we've been talking about, and there's other mutations that we've found, such as ALK and others. And in other diseases, we've found, in other cancers, not lung cancer, but other cancers, we've found other mutations where specific targeted treatments can be very effective. So I think this is entirely the future of cancer treatment, possibly not all cancers, but a good portion of them, where we're finding alterations and finding the right treatment that matches that. And I think that that's more effective for many cancers than anything else.
Sarah, can you tell us how effective these new treatments are? Are we curing patients with these treatments, or what's really the goal and the outcome for most patients getting these new drugs?
Right. So these new drugs are used, as I said before, in patients with more advanced disease where we can't necessarily remove the cancer with a surgery or with radiation. And patients can have really incredible responses to these treatments where the cancer shrinks and patients feel so much better in even a matter of days if these mutations are found and we have the right drug to treat it. And patients can do very well for a very long period of time. It would be unlikely that any of these types of treatments could cure that disease, which is the unfortunate nature of them, that eventually, even though the treatment was so effective, they tend to stop working over time. Now the research goals are to try to figure out newer and better ways of inhibiting those specific alterations in cancer with drugs that are possibly even better than the ones we have now, or possibly combinations, or using them in different ways to try to cure the disease, because we're not quite there yet. And I think that's why I'm personally so excited about research and clinical trials, and I think a lot of people really are, because we have so much success now and we are so much better than we've ever been before, but we're not quite there yet, and we still have a long way to go to get there.
So one of the questions that I think a lot of people have is the difference between genetics and genomics. People are likely listening at home thinking, you know, when you talk about these mistakes or these alterations in genes in a tumor, people often have heard about genetics in terms of, well, my parents had this and my grandparents had this. So are those two things the same or are they different? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so that's a really great point. And I always try to tell my patients this because it's something a lot of people think about. You hear something happens in a gene and you worry that, could I pass this along to my kids or did I inherit this? These types of mutations are completely different than that type of gene when you talk about those types of genes. So it's true that you inherit your genes from your parents and you can pass along genes to your children. But these types of mutations in these specific genes are only found in cancer, the ones that I'm talking about for lung cancer. And so it would be very unlikely that it would be something that you've inherited or that you could pass along. These are in almost all patients with lung cancer who have these. They're just mutations and changes in the genes in the cancer themselves. And because of that, you didn't inherit it and you can't pass it along, but it's something that happened within the cancer and we're not sure why it happened in the cancer, but it's part of why the cancer is growing.
Some patients talk about, you know, what caused this, and I think with lung cancer, obviously smoking is a factor, but for patients with these mutations, are there other factors that they need to worry about, and are most cases of lung cancer now associated with smoking?
So smoking is a very big risk factor for developing lung cancer, but it's definitely not the only one. And we know that because there are many patients who have lung cancer who never smoked or may have smoked not very much many years ago. So it's not the only thing. And then, of course, there's many patients who do smoke who don't get lung cancer. So there's obviously more at play here than we really understand. I think patients or people who smoke, it's always advised to quit smoking if possible, because the risk of lung cancer does go up with smoking. But there's more that, again, we don't know yet. And in terms of other risk factors, there's really not much else that we are able to point to for most people.
So the other thing, you know, when you start talking about why do some people get cancers and other people don't, some people have talked about the immune system and how that plays into cancer development and cancer progression. Can you talk a little bit about that and about whether, in fact, researchers are starting to look at the immune system and how it interplays with cancers and cancer therapy?
Sure. We are definitely very excited about how the immune system is working to fight cancer. So we've known for a long time that the immune system can fight off some cancers. But for many cancers, and lung cancer is included in that, it doesn't do it on its own. Our own immune system should be able to fight cancers, but there's something innate in the cancer that defends itself against it. So your own immune system isn't able to ward off many lung cancers that develop. But now a big focus in research in lung cancer is trying to get your own immune system to do what it should do, which is fight off the cancer. And there are several therapies now that seem to be very, very promising in this regard. And It's another big, big area of research. It's something that at Yale we're all really, really excited about in lung cancer and in other cancers as well, including melanoma and in kidney cancer. There's been very, very exciting early clinical trial data showing that medications that help the immune system fight cancer can be really effective.
Sarah, we've heard about the PD-1 mm-hmm. therapies and how exciting they are in other kinds of cancers. Can you talk about that specifically and tell the audience what it is and how it relates to the lung cancer treatments that you're talking about?
Right. So PD-1 is the therapy you're talking about, and the drugs are in general called anti-PD-1 or sometimes anti-PD-L1 are the two classes of drugs. And there are several different treatments and drugs that are in those two groups. Those are the general types of treatments. And it's basically, those drugs are trying to do just what I was saying a minute ago, basically helping your own immune system fight off the cancer, helping your own immune cells that you already have recognize the foreign tumor, which shouldn't necessarily be there, and helping it fight it off. And it doesn't seem to be effective for all sorts of cancers, and it doesn't seem to be effective in all lung cancers, but in some patients and in a good number of patients, we've seen really, really tremendous responses and really a lot of shrinkage of disease, and patients can do well on them for a long period of time. And it's something that is just so exciting for us now, and it's something that we are working to open other trials of these drugs because they're still in development. They're not standard medications yet, but I'm really hopeful that maybe one day they will be.
I think it's really exciting. Anissa and I both trained a lot, you know, longer ago than you did. and at least when we trained, I don't think anybody thought for one minute that an immunotherapy would be effective in lung cancer.
Yeah.
So this is really, I think, paradigm-shifting research.
It is. There's other cancers where we've thought more optimistically about immune therapies. So melanoma is a disease that we've been using immune therapies for some time, trying to use different ways of helping the immune system fight off cancer. And it seems to be, that does seem to be effective in some patients. But I agree, in lung cancer, it was never one of the diseases even on the radar for having the immune system fight it off. It seemed to just be too impossible. And there's been several different areas of research over many years, vaccine trials and others, where there's still research going on, but none that yet has been as exciting, I don't think, to many people as this anti-PD-1 and anti-PD-L1 therapy has been.
So this brings us back to the importance of clinical trials mm-hmm. and the fact that patients who participate in trials like the trials that went on with anti-PD-L1 and other immunotherapies really benefit from these dramatic responses that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. So for therapies like that, that are immunotherapies that are rather novel, these, one would presume, are therapies that may only be found in larger academic centers or are they in, you know, can you go to your local your local oncologist in smaller towns and get this therapy? Or is this something where, you know, people really need to get to a larger academic center?
So the trials that have already been done were the earlier trials that, for the most part, I think were at larger academic centers. And that tends to be the case, that the earlier trials, where we're paying very close attention to the side effects because we're not familiar with them yet, those tend to be at larger academic centers. Now that several of these medications have been tried in earlier trials and now they're moving on into later trials, I expect that they will be open in other centers that may not be larger academic centers. But I know that the larger centers will also have these trials. I think it's something, because we're all excited about it, we really are trying to open as many of these trials as we can and really trying to get access for our patients to these medications that really may be exciting and effective.
And Sarah, just in the last minute, can you just tell us, you know, what you think is the most exciting in the future? You mentioned PD-1, but are mm-hmm. there other things that we should know about in lung cancer?
I think for the right patient, for every individual patient, there may be something specific that's the most exciting for them. So based on what their tumor shows us, I think we will be able to match the right treatment. So if a patient has EGFR, there may be a specific personalized targeted therapy that's the most exciting for them. In another situation, it might be the immune therapies that are the most exciting. So I think in general, that's the most exciting part about lung cancer research and oncology in general is finding the right treatment for the right patient.
Dr. Sarah Goldberg is Assistant Professor of Medicine and Medical Oncology at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.